You're listening to Radio Influence.
He heard him dead.
Beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the count. Wow. And here's Lucas Amici. And it's all over. It's nice. All over. First round knockout.
Big
is how Rich Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
The biggest Bellator event ever will take place on Saturday night in New York City as Bellator NYC will come from Madison Square Garden. And on Sunday, the UFC will be in Oklahoma City for UFC Fight Night 112. And Daniel Galvan and I are going to preview both of these fight cards on this episode of the MMA Report Preview Podcast on Radio Influence. Now, before I bring in Daniel, I want to tell you about my sponsor, Fight TV. The Fight app is your wrestling, MMA, and boxing TV. Watch live pay-per-views and free programming on your own schedule. Download the Fight app today by going to fightfite.tv/radioinfluence/. Once again, that is fightfite.tv/radioinfluence/. That link is also available on radioinfluence.com. Daniel, it's a busy weekend in MMA, and I want to start off this podcast by asking you a question I asked my followers on Twitter on Thursday. Do you feel any buzz for Bellator NYC?
I absolutely do not. And that's unfortunate because I'm looking forward to this card, but I don't know what I would have imagined the buzz was going to be when Bellator first, you know, ran out that they were going to go back on pay-per-view. But I will say in my own little community, I haven't sensed a whole lot of buzz, but I will say when I have reached out to my own friends and asked them, hey, would you like to watch this Bellator card? And then they ask me, okay, but what's on it? Once I actually told them the entire lineup and I did it in a nice way where I was like, there's this fight between this guy named Douglas Lima and Lorenz Larkin, but hold on, this is exciting because the winner gets Rory McDonald and there's this guy named Michael Chandler where he has a win over Eddie Alvarez, and then they're into the fight. So after I explained it, people were down for this card. It's a good card, but I'm feeling no buzz down in deep South Texas. How about you, Jason? You're kind of more plugged into the sports scene.
I feel absolutely zero buzz for this event. Of course, I feel absolutely zero buzz for the UFC card on Sunday. And look, I mean, it's a solid fight card that Bellator has put together. I think a big reason why there is not a lot of buzz for this event is the fact of people are not all in on the main event of this fight card. And I think that I truly believe that Bellator has done the best they can to promote this fight. However, Wanderlei Silva has not promoted this fight at all. And, you know, we're recording this here on Thursday night. The weigh-ins are on Friday. I mean, if you're Bellator, you're almost hoping that Wanderlei Silva will do something crazy at the weigh-ins to help get a little bit of a buzz. He shoved Shelson on Thursday at the pre-fight press conference. That really did nothing. But, I mean, look, it's a solid fight card. Now, of course, I don't think it's a good thing when I think a majority of fans will sit there and say the best fight on this fight card actually kicks off the pay-per-view. And another question I put out there on social media was, give me your top five fights for Bellator NYC and Bellator 180. They call it two different fight cards, but let's just call it what it is. It's one fight card. And, you know, we were going back and forth about this earlier this week where I look at my top four fights, and I think it's not a good thing when you say your top four fights don't include the main event or co-main event. And I think that says something about the card and the way we think about the main event and co-main event.
Yeah. I have the co-main event in my slotted number four, but I don't have the main event in any of my top five. And we've done this a few times, Jason, where we've ranked our top five fights. And I'm pretty confident that we've had the main event in all of our top five fights, except for I think one time I was trying to be a hipster. And the thing is, like, you can blame Wanderlei because it does seem like he's very much checked out. But to me, it's just more blaming the process of thinking this was going to work because, like, unfortunately, you know, Wanderlei Silva, an absolute legend, but a guy who peaked, you know, from 2000 up until 2002 to, like, 2004, 2005. Like, that was his prime, which was, you know, over a decade ago. He hasn't fought since 2013. I mean, unfortunately, Vanderlei is just kind of he's kind of checked out of the sport, and kind of the same thing can be said for Chael Sonnen. While Chael obviously returning against Tito Ortiz, it's just a matter of there's a real pointlessness to this main event, despite the fact that both these fighters have proven to be stars in the past. It's just that in the present, neither Chael or Vanderlei Silva moved the needle from just a pure competitive standpoint. And it is kind of astonishing that on a Bellator card that isn't super duper deep, that they haven't cracked the top five, but I think it's absolutely accurate.
It was interesting to me to see some of the responses on the top five. And of course, you knew everyone was going to have Lima and Larkin in there. By far, it's the best fight. But there were some responses I got that, as the number five fight, had Heather Hardy. Now, of course, if people are not familiar with Heather Hardy, she is a boxer, a very accomplished boxer, 20-0. She is making her debut in MMA here. And, you know, we hear a lot in today's age of MMA fighters wanting to go to boxers to get that payday. And she's like, well, I'm coming to MMA because for me, MMA pay is better than what she can do in boxing, in female boxing. So that was kind of interesting to me. It was also interesting to me to see that there was a lot of people who didn't have Aaron Pico in the top five fights. And Aaron Pico, for me, is number four. I'll go down my list right now. Number one is Douglas Lima versus Lorenz Larkin. I don't think everyone's got to say that's the number one fight. My number two fight is Phil Davis versus Ryan Bader. Now, I know there's going to be some arguments people will have on that one based on what their first fight went, but to me, when you're talking about two top light heavyweights, you know, top six-ish, seven-ish light heavyweights, they've got to be up there, and hopefully this fight delivers better than the first time. Then my number three fight is Michael Chandler versus Brent Primus. I do believe, and we can get into this, I think people are overlooking Brent Primus. You're going to find out later on this podcast if I'm going to pick Brent Primus in that fight. And then number four to me is Aaron Pico versus Zach Freeman. And a lot of that has to do with just everything we have heard about Aaron Pico. And I'm interested to see how he performs. And then my number five fight is Fedor Emelianenko versus Matt Mitrione. Unfortunately, I do believe this is going to end very sad in this matchup. I don't think this fight's going to get out of the first round. And, you know, it was back in February when these two guys were supposed to fight and we recorded a preview podcast. I sat there and said, Matt Mitrione's going to win the first round. And there's nothing that has changed my mind. Now, for you, what is your top five?
Look, dude, a lot of times we aren't in sync, but here we are practically there. And it's the top three. I totally agree with you. Larkin and Lima. Number two, Bader and Davis. And obviously this fight, I would bet my life. You know, if I had to bet my life, which I would rather not bet on a mixed martial arts fight, but if I had to, I would bet that it will be boring, unfortunately. But who knows? Maybe we'll get a knockout or a submission. But, like, if you look at the UFC light heavyweight rankings, you got John Jones, Cormier, Gustafsson, and then you could make a case that Davis and Bader might slot in ahead of Manoa and Teixeira. Now, I probably would put Manoa over both of them, but at this point in time, but, like, if they're the five or six best 205ers on the planet, that's a damn good fight, and it's a close one. Number three, I actually put Fedor Mitrione at number three. I misspoke there. I got Chandler Primus at number three, excuse me. Four, Fedor Mitrione. Five, Pico and Freeman. So I just want to, I guess, touch on the Pico fight first, because to me that has to be on the top five, just because when you Google Aaron Pico's name, and you look at the top stories, you have respected journalists like Kevin Ioli and Brett Okamoto with headlines like this. Is Aaron Pico the greatest prospect in MMA history? Is Bellator prodigy Aaron Pico the next big thing in MMA? So yeah, there is a subtle amount of hype for this kid, Jason. Like there is a little bit of hype. And when there is that much hype, when people are making these types of proclamations, it's hard not to pencil this in as a top five fight just to see him perform against like a very impressive opponent in Zach Freeman.
That's the thing about Aaron Pico. I think he's got the most pressure on him of any fighter on this card. To me, he's got to be the guy you say has got the most pressure heading into this one. And look, you can call this a showcase fight, but Bellator did not give him an easy fight. And I was having this conversation with somebody earlier this week, and I said, if your pro debut is against a fighter who's 8-2 and has challenged for the RFA lightweight title, if you win that fight, what's your next fight?
And well, the interesting thing is he's also talked about how he believes he wants like 6 fights before he gets a title shot. So the progression from Zach Freeman over a better opponent, a better opponent, a better opponent, like you'll get there a lot quicker than in 6 fights on the Bellator trajectory. So I honestly, it's probably going to be similar level opponents because Zach Freeman is pretty good. He lost his last fight in RFA. It was like a 5-round bout. He lost it pretty convincingly on the feet, but he's had some quality wins. I think the Aaron DeRowan is probably the biggest one. This is a real legit veteran in the sport with success, and it's just like one of the better debut fights we've seen on a big stage. And I would assume Aaron Pico is going to thrive here and look dominant and get a big win here because the way that people are talking about him, it makes you like we hear prospect talk all the time, mm-hmm. but then there's another. Like the same way people would talk about Cain Velasquez and Dan Cormier, and I understand that those guys along with Pico are Bob Cook guys, but the way they would talk about John Jones, et cetera, there just appears to be a different tone, and it seems as though Aaron Pico is there. I mean, he has the track record, obviously, of being just a real successful wrestler, but I think it ties together. The reason why you get so excited is when people say things like he's a better boxer than a wrestler, which I just cannot believe whatsoever. But I'm sure he's a talented boxer, and I think he will look impressive. And again, Heather Hardy is kind of a much lighter example of what Aaron Pico is bringing to the table. She is not nearly the prospect, but she's also a prospect and a woman fighter to keep an eye on. Bellator has done a nice job, I think, of signing these fighters who have yet to compete in the sport professionally on deals very early on. I believe they signed Pico when he was 17 years old. And that to me is just a real smart strategy by Scott Coker that a lot of times when we talk about what Bellator is using to kind of counter the UFC, that to me, signing these 17-year-old prospects or signing fighters that are transitioning that have high upsides is the best thing Bellator can do if they want to compete with the UFC other than sign the Rory McDonalds of the world.
Yeah, I believe the story is that Pico actually signed the contract on his 18th birthday. It's when he was 17 that Bob Cook reached out to Scott Coker and said, hey, you know, you guys come check this guy. He's done, you know, golden gloves in boxing. Everyone knows about his wrestling. But, you know, it is a tough fight to pick because, you know, we've never seen Aaron Pico in an MMA cage. And, you know, to me, he's got all the pressure. I mean, you know, other matchups on this fight card that had me interested, James Gallagher, Chinzo Machida, a lot of that, you know, I got down a little bit on James Gallagher after that Anthony Taylor fight where I thought that was a fight that was more of a showcase fight and really didn't end up being a showcase fight for him. And of course, he's coming off a big win earlier this year. He has told me he only has 2 fights left on his deal. He did say he's very happy with Bellator, but you have to imagine the fact that he just changed management companies, now represented by Paradigm Sports Management. Of course, also represents his training partner, Conor McGregor. I do expect that James Gallagher is going to fight out his deal. And, you know, one of those guys would be kind of interesting to see with free agency. Neiman Gracie, I think that's going to be a little bit of a showcase fight for him there. He's going to be the second fight on the Spike Cup, you know, Bellator 180 card, which I just call it the prelims. In terms of other notable fights on the Bellator 180 prelims, you have Ryan Couture moving up to 170, taking on Jaime Gozawa. Ryan Couture told me that this is not a permanent move. It was just an opportunity that came up that they want to take advantage of. But his plan is to go back down to 155 pounds. But let's start off with the main event of Chael Sonnen and Wanderlei Silva. You know the last time Wanderlei Silva won back-to-back fights?
I'm just going to assume 2006.
Yeah, 2000 and in 2005 and 2006 in Pride. That was a guess,
but it's not like I was looking at his Wikipedia. I promise I wasn't looking at his Wikipedia.
You know, and then, of course, you know, he ended up losing 3 in a row and then, you know, got a win against Keith Jardine, lost back-to-back fights. And since since then, he has alternated wins and losses. This is his first fight since March 3rd, 2013. That was at UFC on Fuel TV 8 against Brian Stann. And of course, we all know the issues that Wanderlei Silva has had over the past couple of years, and now taking on Chael Sonnen. Of course, Chael Sonnen will be looking for his first win since August 17th, 2013, which was against Shogun Hua there. Of course, he's lost back-to-back fights since those were Rashad Evans and Tito Ortiz. And while I talked about it, it's tough to kind of predict the Aaron Pico fight, to me, I have no issues in picking a winner here, Daniel.
It seems quite clear that you got to go Chael with this fight, right, Jason?
Oh, I mean, look, I think that Wanderlei will be will fight with emotions. I think he'll rush in, and I think the fight immediately goes to the ground. I mean, do we all forget how easily Chael Sonnen took him down in flip-flops?
Well, I don't know if you saw Wanderlei's shove, but he nearly got a TKO doctor stoppage shoving Chael's shoulder out at the press conference today. Yeah, look, this is not a great fight at all. And it's a matter of, despite the fact that Chael got caught in a rear naked choke against a very, very old Tito Ortiz, you still have a general sense that he has a firmer grasp on his like prime than Wanderlei at this point. And this fight makes me feel real uncomfortable. Honestly, like, the storyline for Chael versus Wanderlei Silva is like, Wanderlei shouldn't fight anymore. Just the amount of damage this guy has taken in his career through training and in his fights and in times where he's fought multiple times in a single night. It's like he simply shouldn't fight anymore for the sake of his health. Like, and I don't say this often. I tend to be a bit more liberal with letting guys determine the end of their own careers. But for Wanderlei, seeing him talk at times and just seeing the way he looks and understanding the fact that his very first professional fight took place and I was literally less than 1 year old. Seriously, like 1996. I'm about to be 22. It's just, I just wish he wouldn't fight again. Fortunately, Chael isn't like a striker, but to me, the real damage for Wanderlei isn't so much the fight, but actually the training. I mean, that's where, to me, a lot of the brain trauma will take place is in training, sparring sessions, etc. So I just feel uncomfortable about this fight taking place. But I think Chael's going to win, man, with his wrestling, unless he gets caught, which could take place, but I think it's highly unlikely. I would really like to look at the training footage of both guys headed into this fight. But with that being said, Sonnen is the clear win. The question is, does he win via TKO or submission, or is Wanderlei going to be able to survive? This is only a 3-round fight, right?
Correct, yeah.
Okay, thank God. Thank God. That's the most relieving thing I've heard all day. Can you imagine this one going to the 4th round?
Here's a crazy thing. Wanderlei Silva has never lost via submission.
Wow. Wow.
He has 6 losses by knockout, 6 losses by decision.
It could be the first here. It could be the first, and likely a rear naked choke is what I would assume. One of those things where raining down strikes, gives up his back, gets choked out. But that's astonishing given how many fights he's had and really how many great grapplers he's fought throughout his career. And you know, we've been pretty negative on Wanderlei here. So again, let's remember the good times. I mean, he had such success in Pride. I mean, he was he had Quinton Jackson's number up until they met in the UFC, man. Finished him back-to-back times. I mean, one of those, the second fight was like one of the better fights for a very long time. And he really ran the table. Let's see, here we go. From about like August 2000 up until October 2004, I want to say he had nearly 20 fights and was unbeaten in all those fights. He had a draw, no contest there. I'm very bad at counting. But that run he went on in Pride is something worth remembering as we kind of talk about Wanderlei, because I feel confident that for one of these guys, for sure, this is their last fight.
I'm glad you brought up your age, because that made me think about something I did want to talk about. One of the things that I agree with what Scott Coker has said leading into this fight is this is a pay-per-view that has everything for all types of fight fans. it has the fight at the top where for that old school MMA fan who, you know, was watching Vanderlei back in the day in Pride and watching Fedor, you've got the two title fights that you know, bring in those hardcore fight fans and the fight fans that are looking for the next great guys in Aaron Pico. And we were talking about this earlier this week, and this has got to be one of the questions because of what the main event and co-main event are, and the fact of those are fights that are most likely going to attract to an older audience. Is this a fight card that attracts that college-age demo that you're in?
No, because it doesn't have... No, the answer is simple here. The problem with the sport right now is it's relying on guys that were stars in 2008. And an army of stars have not been created. Some stars have, but keep this in mind. Michael Chandler is 31 years old, not a star, had so much success in Bellator. When Vanderlei was 31, the year was 2008. He was already in the UFC. He already had his fight with Chuck Liddell. He was already a major star. Like, when are these guys who are super talented going to become stars? And I don't know what it was that created so many stars in 2006, 2007, 2008, 2005. Just all the guys that Bellator has really leaned on for these tentpole events, the Rampages, the Vanderleis, all, they're not really being replaced at the same quantity. We had a couple here or there, but despite the fact that these guys are incredibly talented, it's just like they're relying on fighters that were stars 10 years ago, and there hasn't been too many guys to replace them. That, to me, is the honest truth here, is that people who are college age my age, we watched Vanderlei Silva fights. The, you know, for people in my age group, I think either the biggest fight they saw for Vanderlei was either the Chuck fight, or if they took the sport a little later, when he fought Rampage Jackson for the third time at 92. I think that was like Forrest Griffin and Rashad Evans. So we watched Vanderlei. It's just that we're not stupid and we're kind of aware that he's a bit past his prime. Like, we thoroughly enjoyed watching Jeff Garcia play football, but we don't want to see it now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just something that I really wonder about. You know, is MMA still booming in that demo? Because, you know, we talked about that Nielsen median age survey, which kind of makes you definitely wonder where it's going. But I like Shelson. I think this fight ends in the first round. I don't think it goes very long. You know, I would tell you, in terms of the betting odds, just play that plus 140 Shelson and wins inside the distance. That's probably definitely the way you want to go. Now, the co-main event of this fight card, this is the crazy part about this co-main event, and I'm pretty sure we talked about this the first time that they were scheduled to fight back in February, is the fact of Matt Mitrione is only 2 years younger than Fedor Emelianenko.
Yeah, I was going to talk about this old heavyweight and be like, now let me talk about Fedor. Both these guys are up there in age. The difference, I guess, is that Mitrione spent so much of the early part of his life playing a different sport. I think that's why Mitrione has been the pick here for a while, but it seems like the narrative has shifted, man. When you look at these odds here, this is basically, they're even odds with these two guys, Fedor and Mitrione. And I don't know, man, I'm getting really nostalgic about Fedor Emelianenko, thinking he's going to ride down, you know, get the victory and strap on a sweater afterwards. I get the sense that I should have looked at where the line started, but I feel like we've had more and more people as the fight got rebooked and whatnot, as we got details of Matt Mitrione's kidney stones, which I know you loved hearing about.
Oh, God, that was so painful to listen to.
Yeah, and I'm sure. Yes, exactly. That's awful. And I think that do you think the public's kind of shifted towards Fedor as we've closed in on this fight?
The public definitely has, but I think when you look at this, and you could probably just go back and I could probably just import what I said back in February at this fight, you look at, I think the southpaw will give Fedor problems. I think the athleticism of Mitrione is going to give him problems as well. You know, if Fabio Maldonado could tear up Fedor the way he did in the opening round when they fought, which, let's be honest, if that fight was in the United States and not in Russia, Fabio Maldonado would have won that fight by stoppage in the opening round. I don't think this fight sees the second round. I think it's a brutal TKO finish by Matt Mitrione.
It's going to be, I would assume, a first round finish as well. Now, I will counter you with this one, Jason. If Carl C. Manutafa can rock Matt Mitrione like he did in their fight, then why can't Fedor? Like, both these guys have not looked dynamite in their more recent outings. Even the Ole Thompson fight was a bit back and forth, which leads me to believe Fedor has an opportunity to land a big shot, but also leads me to believe that Mitrione will land a big shot, and this one will be over in the first two rounds for sure. I mean, Emelianenko has been on the most depressing five-fight win streak I think I've ever seen on a large scale. I mean, look at the names here, man. This starts in 2011. Jeff Munson, Satoshi Ishii, Pedro Hizo in the year 2012, Singh Jaideep, and Fabio Maldonado. I mean, you want to talk about, like, negative gravity. I mean, it's crazy how he's pieced together five victories, and it seemed like he has less stock than he did when he got knocked out by Dan Henderson. Mitrione's a smart pick if you use your head, but I'm not going to. I'm going to use my heart. And I feel like Fedor is going to catch Mitrione in an early exchange. What I most expect, though, is just a barrage of strikes in both fighters, and one of them goes down. Fedor does have one heck of a chin, and I guess the one guy to beat him through stoppage thus far, just in his career, like through strikes. I know Silva got like a doctor stoppage, but I guess Henderson has been the only one to actually legit knock out Fedor. So Mitrione has a great possibility of doing so, but I don't think so, man. I'm going to Fedor Emelianenko.
Well, I'm going Matt Mitrione, and I think, unfortunately, I hope I'm wrong, but I just think that it's going to be kind of a sad ending. Lightweight title fight, Michael Chandler, Brent Primus. Michael Chandler is a huge favorite on this fight card, almost a 9-1 favorite. I thought it was interesting listening to his interview with Ariel Helwani on Thursday, mentioned the fact of he was disappointed that Bellator was unable to sign Justin Gaethje, and listening to what he said, to me, it pretty much, I think he's putting it out there. I'm fighting out my contract, and I'm going to see where things are at by the time that contract is up. You know, on this week's episode of the MMA Insiders podcast, I asked Sam Kaplan if he thought there were similarities between the 2011 fight between Michael Chandler and Eddie Alvarez and this fight between Michael Chandler and Brent Primus. You know, looking at where Chandler was in 2011 to where Brent Primus is right now. And he said, yeah, there definitely is similarities. But he said, however, there's big differences. And the big difference is, you know, Michael Chandler was just a much better fighter back then than what Brent Primus is right now. Brent Primus, I know, has done a lot of cross-training for this one. It sounds like pretty much no expense was shedded in terms of getting him ready in this fight. I'm still picking Michael Chandler, but I think this fight is closer than people think.
Yeah, this will probably do more for Brent than any fight he's had, and he'll probably lose the fight anyway because the spotlight will be there. The context of just a top-tier quality opponent will be there. So Brent Primus comes out here, fights him close, or at least doesn't get dominated. That's a net victory for him. It's hard for me to draw the parallel between Brent and Michael just because Primus is older and just because, like, Chandler debuted just a year beforehand. He just got – well, really, Brent had a lot of issues and bad luck, I would assume, with injuries. I'm not sure if he had injuries at the very, very beginning of his career when he first debuted, but it just seems like he's been so inactive. It's been like one fight a year deal here. Yeah. But the similarity is there in that this appears to be a situation in which – the perception of Brent Primus is going to change dramatically for the positive, maybe. The more and more I think about this fight, though, the more and more I feel as though Michael Chandler is going to have his way with Primus on the feet. And he's going to have the wrestling defense to really negate too much out of him. I love the story of Brent Primus. Ben Folks did a nice article talking about how he got kicked out of his house when he was 13. He obviously, when you get kicked out of your house when you're 13, you tend not to become a PhD, right? You tend to go down a poor path. And he had a pretty awesome life for like a high schooler. Like, he had his own house, right? And he could go get video games, but he was also selling illegal drugs, which is very bad and led him down an awful path. And then he freaking rebounded his life, and here he is. So for him to be here is a win of itself and a great story. And I'm glad he's really turn things around. He's one of the top fighters in the division, and he may one day be champion, you know, once Michael Chandler leaves. But I think Chandler wins with a stoppage, TKO, second round. I do want to ask you, though, how would you imagine Primus will come into this fight and look impressive? Like, what kind of strategy do you think he's going to employ against Chandler?
I think his strategy is going to be stick and move and just, you know, land a punch, get out of range, land a punch, get out of range, and try to frustrate Michael Chandler, I think, and try to use his wrestling, whatnot. I mean, I think that everyone is expecting a blowout in this fight, and, you know, I'm still picking Michael Chandler, and I think he likely gets a stoppage probably, you know, second, third round-ish. But I just think the fight's a little closer than people think. And, you know, but this, you know, and I think a big reason why people feel that way is Brent has not looked good in his last two fights. And there's definitely a case to say he didn't win his last fight, but, you know, and he's not been an active fighter. This would be his fourth fight in the last 4 years. You know, and there's been some issues of, you know, fights being canceled that weren't necessarily his fault. But, It probably, if Brent wins it, it's probably a dirty fight and probably not an exciting fight that people would watch, but we'll see what happens there. Douglas Lima, Lorenz Larkin, welterweight title. This one, Daniel, this one's a tough one to call. And as I've more thought about this fight, and I'm picking Douglas Lima to win, I think this fight will be look very similar to Douglas's win over Paul Daly last year.
Okay, I could see that. And congratulations to Lorenz Larkin on his victory, because I have Lima too. And whenever it's a fight this close and we both are in the same camp, it's just never good for us. Yeah, I could see that, man. I mean, I think this is going to be mostly on the feet, because I think both these guys believe they're going to come in there and outstrike the other one. And we've seen takedowns out of both fighters. You know, Lima's really impressed me with his addition there. He's been able to, at times, steal points. And then Lorenz, I would say, is the better wrestler of the two, but maybe I'm wrong there. I just think it's going to come down to stand-up, and it's going to be maybe even similar to Larkin's loss to Albert Tumanov, where he does real well with his kicks, but ultimately doesn't do too well with the boxing, or doesn't do as well as Lima with the boxing, and loses some rounds here. I anticipate just a decision victory for Lima, a razor-thin one, a close stand-up battle. And again, this is the fight to watch if you're buying this pay-per-view. It's my number one fight. It's your number one fight. And the reason being is this is a close, razor-thin fight. When it was announced, I was leaning towards Lorenz Larkin. And it's also going to likely be very, very fun to watch. And an explosive stand-up battle is what I expect as well. And while I think Larkin will be very, very deadly and lethal with the leg kicks, and you may see a little bit of limp out of Lima, I think Lima's boxing will hold through and he'll get a decision win.
A question I want to mention here before we talk about the rest of this fight card. Got this from @baseballdude833, and he said, any idea if the show is sold out? What if the arena is half empty? I will tell you, about a week or two ago, I heard that, you know, they were looking around 7,000, 8,000. I heard on Thursday that could be as much as 10,000. I will also tell you that I did have someone tweet me on Thursday basically saying that ticket sales are not as good. And this came from, you know, @Dan PIROZ. He's saying, I work for a ticket company. MSG called our office and each employee individually trying to unload a ton of tickets. It's really bad. You know, one of the things I did hear about 5 days ago, that they were doing buy four tickets for the price of three, but all signs do point to it's going to be a very good card, a very good attendance on Saturday night for Bellator NYC. Did want to get that question in there. Aaron Pico, Zach Freeman, we kind of mentioned this one. I guess blindly I'm picking Aaron Pico, and I think it's more because of the things you hear about this kid and the fact of Bellator putting him in here against Zach Freeman tells me Bellator is very confident he can win this fight, because clearly it's not in Bellator's best interest to put Aaron Pico in a fight they think he could lose.
Yeah. Look, Scott Coker, this may be a flop. Like, this pay-per-view may do under, I have a feeling it's going to do less than 100,000 buys. That's my personal thought. I hope I'm wrong, and I hope it does 150, 200,000. Unlikely, though. But that being said, Scott Coker is like one of the best promoters in mixed martial arts history in America. undoubtedly one of the best. And I think one of the great things he does is finding guys and doing a nice job of building around them. Also finding women like Ronda Rousey. So you got to think that Coker knows best, and he basically you blindly pick Aaron Pico and you hope that you sound smart. So for the sake of the sport, Jason, I hope Aaron Pico wins, because by God, we need stars. Mm-hmm. And Aaron Pico may be that guy. It'll be interesting to see what his promos are like after the fight. But that's if he gets a promo afterwards. He has to win first, and Freeman's good. But I think if I'm Aaron Pico, I probably want to go out here and impress people with my striking, and I would expect that to be the case. I would be maybe shocked if we see a takedown, because it seems like he's been talking up his hand so much that he wants to come out here and set a reputation of him being a stand-up fighter first. So I expect a knockout victory for Aaron Pico, and I'm assuming he's going to wrestle his way to a win. And one last thing I wanted to bring up to you real quick about prospects or whatever. How many Americans, Jason, do you think won a gold medal at the Olympics in wrestling in 2016, or if any did?
Was it zero?
Two. I was shocked to figure that out today.
Well, what was it? I'm just drawing the blank on who they were then.
Exactly. That's okay. You know, Kyle Snyder,
yeah,
was the American, 21 years old. And then the other one was a woman, Heather. What's her name? Can't believe I forgot her name. Anyways, I was so shocked to find out, and I'm sure Lou Thomas is like, "You guys are a bunch of idiots." But you know, he's all up in the Helen Morales. She won freestyle. So both of them won gold medals, and that was the most shocking thing to me, because I could have sworn that we had all agreed as Americans, if an American was in like an Olympic gold medalist final, it would have been like broadcasted on primetime NBC, and that didn't take place. So, anyways. We had two athletes from America win gold, so look for Snyder and look for Helen to see if either the UFC or Bellator acquire them. But Snyder's like 21 years old, so I think he may go for the Olympics one more time. So I just wanted to let you know that. I was stunned to figure that out today, that in 2016 we had two Olympic gold medalists in wrestling. Anyways.
Snyder will be a UFC belt. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah, and
yeah. he's not coming to Bellator.
If he's going to be here in 5 years, yeah.
The two fights I want to mention on the rest of this card in terms of the Bellator 180 card, Phil Davis, Ryan Bader, and James Gallagher, Chinzo Machida. Davis, Bader, let's just hope it ends up being better than what the first fight was. And, I mean, look, maybe you point to, you say, hey, those guys were fighting like at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning in Sweden. Maybe that had something to do with it. Both these guys, you know, there is a thought process, the fact that they're both on flat fee deals. There is no bonus for winning. That it's going to bring, you know, more action out there to us. But I still think this goes 25 minutes. And I think this is a grinding type fight. And I'm going Phil Davis.
Man, I feel like Phil Davis peaked as a star like 3 fights into his career. Like, remember when he first came into the UFC and in his UFC career? Like, remember when he first came into the UFC and we had all these amazing stories about being Mr. Wonderful and he had a cat and everything? And it's like, man, where is that personality? I hope Bellator can capture that. This fight's probably not going to be great. Bader won the first one, right? He did enough on the feet. He had enough wrestling defense. Look, if you're Bellator, if you're going to run it back on pay-per-view, you got to go with the trilogy. Bader Davis 3, that's going to do 250,000 buys, obviously. So I go I like Ryan Bader in this fight. I think he has enough wrestling defense to steal enough rounds on the feet, because if these two guys do stand and trade, I don't feel confident at all that Phil will get the better of Bader. And give or take 3 of those 5 rounds going that way, I like Bader. But this is a great fight. Again, it's the great fight in terms of the sporting aspect. It's my number 2 fight, and we disagree here. I got Bader. You got Davis.
Yeah.
And then you have Gallagher, Machida, right? The other one, which is like, that's amazing. The fact that you have one guy who's literally twice the age of the other, and he only has – wait, do they have the same amount of fights, or does Chinzo have 2 more?
Chinzo has 1 more.
Okay, he has 1 more. So basically the story of this fight is Chinzo Machida is not very good with his wrestling defense, but he just needs one single strike to knock out anybody. And he is very much like his brother, and like he's super patient, but he'll land one karate style karate kid wax on wax off strike. And then James Gallagher, right? He's your stereotypical English wrestler, because we get so many of those. But I like Chinzo to be the underdog and pull off the win, Jason, because I haven't pulled the trigger on too many underdogs here. And because of that, I like Machida to win at 40 years old.
Yeah, I'm going Gallagher by submission. But I'll say this. If you listen to a Chinzo Machida interview, just close your eyes and you would think it's Lyoto. They sound just alike.
Those are Lyoto, one of the best promos in the business, Jason. Yeah, that's it's unfortunate that he's finding the sport so late, because like his knockouts are just like the one knockout he had on Access TV car, which was a knee. If you have not seen it, go out and check it. I thought he killed a man with that knee. So I'm looking forward to that fight, man. Machida Gallagher is a real. That fight might have been number five. It was. That's a good fight, man. A really good fight. Looking forward to it. And Gallagher in his camp, I'm assuming they're not really preparing for anything, so I'm sure they'll all be focused on this fight.
Yeah, but that should be a very good fight there. Expect Neven Gracie win. I'm picking Heather Hardy, but the question is, if Alice Yager takes a fight to the ground, what will her ground game look like there? But it should be a good night of fights on Saturday night, Bellator NYC. Now on Sunday, it is UFC Fight Night 112. And don't talk about his mama, or he is might try to punch you at a press conference. Michael Chiesa versus Kevin Lee. And you talk about no buzz heading in for Bellator NYC. And you would think, because of what happened just a month ago, that there would be some buzz from Michael Chiesa and Kevin Lee. And man, there's no buzz.
Yeah. What time is this airing on the main card? Do you know what time is airing?
9 p.m. Eastern time.
I would not be shocked if the rating is – actually, I don't know. I'm very interested in the Sunday ratings. I feel like people don't watch UFC on Sunday evenings, but maybe they do. The thing is, like, there's no sports other than baseball, unless I'm missing something.
No,
so,
there's nothing else, yeah. No,
so that's that's the big thing in the cap. And maybe – I don't know. No buzz for sure. Looking forward to this fight. It's a real good fight card. If you're a mixed martial arts fan – you're going to feel very tired waking up Monday morning, especially if you watch everything on the Bellator card, because between these two events, you have to be almost at 30 total fights. Maybe more, Jason. No, I think you're at like 28 fights between these two, right?
Yeah, you know what the crazy thing about Michael Chiesa, and I think you really don't think about it, but he is right now the number 6 lightweight title challenger.
Definitely didn't think about it, but I was starting to figure out why before doing prep for fights. Sometimes I look at the odds, sometimes I don't. And before doing prep for this fight, Jason, I was going to assume that Kevin Lee was going to be like at minus 210 or 220. And then I saw how close the lines were. And then I looked at, refresh my memory, watched their fights. And I'm like, oh God, yeah. Michael Chiesa has had much more success than Kevin Lee against much better competition. And he's starting to look real good with those wins over Dariush and Jim Miller. Like, he has really turned things around from like the loss to Lozon. Like, this has been a nice little win streak. But a lot of these fights, by the way, have been back and forth for Michael Chiesa. So that's something worth remembering, thinking about whether or not he is just a top 6 lightweight. At the end of the day, I don't feel as though he's like a top 5 type fighter. But he's done quite a bit. I mean, he has a win over Trinaldo, which is Kevin Lee's most impressive victory thus far.
And I mean, you got to remember, it's been 14 months since we've seen Michael Chiesa fight against that win against Benil Dariush. But when I hear Kevin Lee on Fight Week talk about he still weighs 180 pounds, man, that doesn't make me feel – and I probably wasn't going to take Kevin Lee in this fight anyway, just because I think just Michael Chiesa is just a more well-rounded fighter. But when I hear that, I'm like, dude, you got to get down to 156 pounds by Saturday.
I really worry about Kevin Lee with a lot of what he's saying, because I get the sense he may have lost himself in the hype of this fight, dude. Like, he's only 24 years old, and I don't get the sense that he's like a puppeteer pulling the strings of his persona, right? Like, I'm scared for Lee that he may have lost perception on what's important, what's brought him to the table. So being that heavy is a big issue. This has been one where it's like Kevin Lee, just a dynamic. Ever since we originally saw him enter the UFC, he's had a couple tough losses, but he's pieced together four straight wins. And then the way he just, I feel as though he's finished all but a couple, two or three of his fights in the UFC. And the way he dominates with his wrestling, with his top control, explosiveness, with some of his strikes, it's hard to not to fall in love with Kevin Lee. But when push comes to shove, you know, Kevin Lee did talk about Michael Chiesa's mother, and there's some type of karma in the world where you talk about someone's mama and you end up tapping out. So,
and look, I always say with trash talk, you got to leave the family out, family members out of this. But if you're Kevin Lee on fight night, don't you just start trash talking him inside the cage and try to see if you can get Chiesa too emotional and he starts to make mistakes?
I mean, don't you just come out to like a song about a mother for your entrance song? Like, yo mama so fat. Like, I don't know if that's a song, but if you come out to some type of derogatory song towards mothers as your entrance song, as Michael Chiesa's in the cage, you may have won the fight because Chiesa will just attack you as you enter the cage. And by the way, Michael Chiesa kind of gets like angry for no good reason. I was reading about, I forgot that he like was mad at Mitch Clark when they were fighting. And the reason why he was mad at Mitch Clark was just that Mitch Clark wanted to fight him. Like, he just wanted the matchup. And that offended Michael Chiesa. So maybe Michael Chiesa is like the UFC version of like, you know, someone that gets offended at anything. Maybe that's the issue for Chiesa, is a bit too emotional. But at the end of the day, you don't talk about someone's mother. But in terms of fight analysis, my actual analysis is that I actually believe Kevin Lee will get the better of Chiesa early, only for Chiesa to kind of rebound in the grappling aspect in round two or three and sneak in with some type of submission. It seems as though that is Chiesa's forte, where he's not necessarily going to come out and dominate a guy from the beginning of the fight to the very end. It's more of a matter of kind of showcasing a lot of those intangible type skills and kind of gutting fights out and getting late finishes. So that's how I see this one taking place.
And of course, Kevin Lee did bring up Michael Chiesa's mother this week when he talked to me in Las Vegas, where he said, quote, mentally, he'll break. He's going to stay in there for the long run. He's going to go into a defensive shell. He don't want to get beat up in front of his mama. So he's going to get into a defensive shell and try not to get knocked out, but he's going to be in for a long night, baby. That was Kevin Lee earlier this week. And from a UFC perspective, and you're trying to find guys that know how to promote themselves, I think in an ideal world, you would want Kevin Lee to win this fight, because Kevin Lee has shown that this is a guy who can promote himself. And But I think Chiesa's, you know, more well-rounded game is why I do like him in this fight here. In terms of the rest of the main card, I'm still baffled that BJ Penn, Dennis Seaver is the opening fight of the main card. I'm really surprised this is not the co-main event.
Wouldn't it be fun to like really pick the brains of these people that make these decisions? Because I want to ask people about that. I want to ask people about Bader being on, you know, the second best fight on Bellator being on free TV. Like, it would be fun to ask, because I'm sure they have great reasons for doing this. And we've kind of touched on it, right? I think the touchstone for my best guess, Jason, is that so they want the rating for – so I guess you have the prelims on FS2 and then you have the main card on FS1. So it has to be they want that rating for that FS1 broadcast to be real good. And their general sense is that if they can peak the viewers early, they can maintain them late. So that to me has to be the only reason why they have it. And they can justify it, because BJ Penn hasn't been a good fighter for like – you know, when's the last time you saw a BJ Penn fight, dude, and you were like, that was awesome? It had to have been when he fought, was it Diaz? Was that the last time?
No, he got beat up bad in that fight.
He got beat up bad against Nate Diaz? That was a fight of the night.
Yeah, so, I mean, but you got to remember, he was looked bad. I mean, it would have to be Matt Hughes back at UFC 123 when he knocked him out at the very beginning of that fight.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
That was 2010.
Yeah.
I mean, like, this is the thing. Like, if I gave you $100 and you got to place a money on one of two underdogs, and the odds are very familiar. BJ Penn is plus 175. Tim Boach is plus 180. Who you put money on to win?
Oh, Tim Boach, without a doubt.
Wow, you didn't even take a chance to think about that.
No, and look, I get it. We haven't even started talking about Dennis Seaver yet, who hasn't lit the world on fire.
No, here's the sad thing. There's a lot of rumblings that BJ was not in Albuquerque preparing for this fight.
Wait, Hawaii?
Hawaii and California, apparently.
Now, look, there may be a Hawaii renaissance, man. Max Holloway's the champ. Russell Dolan looked good. BJ Penn returns to form. This could be the year of
saying he might be motivated.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, Jesus. Is BJ Penn motivated? Dude, I had pimples all over my face, and my username was Frank Trigg Twinkle Toes 24. And I was posting about that on message boards back in, it's astonishing.
Why has no one created a t-shirt for that? Motivated BJ Penn.
I'm sure you can get it at bjpenn.com, right next to all the articles. Like, if you, I love bjpenn.com. You can just go there and you can read all the articles from MMA Junkie, MMA Fighting, all in one place, just without the credit. That's my favorite part. Yeah, I'm sorry. Sorry, bjpenn.com. I'm sure there's some good writers there, but, like, obviously. Anyways, Dennis Seaver, by the way, like, hasn't been great either. He has not competed in a very long time. It's just that BJ has looked so flat in his fights that it just reminds me of the same way I felt about Takanori Gomi on the Singapore card. Is like, I just don't feel confident picking him against any UFC caliber fighter. Whereas with Johnny Hendricks and Tim Boach, for one, Tim Boach has dramatic knockout power. Not that I expect that fight to go that way. And Johnny has had some very poor performances, despite his most recent one being okay against Hector Lombard. Maybe he's found himself at a new weight. Boach is a much, much liver dog at plus 180 than BJ is at plus 175, in my personal opinion. But if BJ Penn comes out there and beats Dennis Seaver, that is kind of an awesome moment. Like, that is kind of like, that's what we will. Okay, if BJ Penn wins on Sunday, is that the first thing that leads Ariel Helwani's show, MMA Hour? Or is he talking about Bellator first?
I think it's Bellator.
Even if BJ Penn wins?
Yeah, even if BJ wins. I just, for some reason, why do I just see Seaver spinning back kick right to the liver, and that ultimately leads to the end of that fight?
Yeah, I think so too, man. I think so too. And for that lineup on that fight card, are they doing Penn Seaver, and are they following that up with Means and Garcia?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, that's actually, I mean, I would.
It's a hell of a start.
Hell yeah. Garcia Means might be one of my favorite fights of the weekend, dude. Garcia Means is going to be dope as hell. Like, both these guys are dynamic strikers, exciting fighters. Alex Garcia is one of three or four people in the UFC that kind of reminds you of Vitor Belfort, both in looks and fight style. And I think that's a sweet fight. I think Tim Means is going to win it. Two things. I don't want him to beat the hell out of me for me criticizing him, which he just does that. He, like, listens to every podcast, reads every article, and he will call you out in his post-fight interview. But more importantly, he has a pretty big reach advantage, I believe, or for sure a height advantage.
He's got 3 inches on the reach.
He has 3 inches on the reach, and he's 6'2", and Garcia's 5'9". That's not good for Garcia. So, I think Means wins a striking battle, but he could get caught for sure with the power out of Garcia.
You know, also, Dom Reyes making his UFC debut here, taking on Joaquin Christensen, steps up on short notice. Of course, everyone remembers the viral knockout he had at the recent LFA show. And, it was interesting when I had a chance to talk to him. It was about a day before he actually signed with the UFC. And I said, you know, when we have these viral videos, that's what people are going to think of you. And I said, what do you want people to think about you? And he says, just that I'm an intelligent guy, which I was like, okay, that's an interesting conversation there. Yeah. You know, I mean, you've got Herrick and Justine Kish, Boach and Hendricks. I like Tim Boach in that fight.
So that's your underdog for the weekend is Tim Boach?
Yeah, I'll go Tim Boach, yeah.
Okay, I like it. I respect it. Man, I don't know what my big underdog this weekend is there really isn't a dog on the main card I like. To me, the Herrick-Justine Kish fight is just such a push that you can't even consider either one of those as a dog, obviously. That's a great fight. I mean, Felice turned things around in her more recent fight against Alexa Grasso. And Justine's always been a real skilled with the grappler base, kind of improving her pace. If you want an underdog pick, gosh, I guess I'm going to have to go with Vitor Miranda against Marvin Vettori. And that's largely due to my confidence in his stand-up power. The other one I was kind of looking at was Clay Guida against Eric Koch. But the issue there is if Guida's going to win, it's going to be due to like lay and pray probably. And Koch's got really stellar wrestling defense. So Vitor Miranda is my underdog for the weekend.
I would look at Marina Moroz as well.
Yeah, Carlos Barza has looked flat recently.
Yeah, I mean, it's it's an okay fight night card. I think there's fights on every portion of the fight card that there's a reason for me to tune in. Tony Martin, Johnny Case, this is a matchup that Tony Martin has wanted for some time and finally got this opportunity. You also have Jared Gordon making his UFC debut. Of course, it was supposed to happen a couple of events ago, but that ultimately did not take place. Guida back at 155 taking on Eric Koch. Marvin Vettori, who was actually a guest here on the MMA Report podcast earlier this week. He wants a matchup against Eric Spicely after this one. So we'll see if he gets it there. But really, it is all about that main event. And really, it's a big 155-pound fight. And unfortunately, it's just not getting any talk. And, you know, for Michael Chiesa, you just talk about just having some bad luck. You know, what was it? You know what? A little less than a year ago, guys was fight Tony Ferguson. And now look where Michael Chiesa is in comparison to Tony Ferguson. I mean, injuries are part of this sport, but I'm going to go Michael Chiesa. I'm going to go Tim Boach. I'm going to go Felice Herrick. Don't necessarily feel great about that one. Dom Reyes, Tim Means. I will go Dennis Seaver. I'm going to go Eric Koch, Marvin Vettori, Marina Moroz, Powell and Horscher. I'm leaning Daryl Horscher. Not comfortable in that one. I'll go Gordon. I'm going to say Tony Martin. And the opening matchup of this fight card will be Joshua Stansberry. He is going to take on Jeremy Kimball. Of course, the prelims will start at 5:30 p.m. Eastern time. I'm going to go with Josh Stansberry on that one.
I disagree, Jason. Jeremy Kimball will win that fight. And that, to me, is the most compelling fight of the weekend. Actually, could be good. That could be a good scrap. Yeah, I like Kimball. I like Johnny Case. I like Michael Quinones, Daryl Horcher, and a scrapper with Devin Powell. Carla Esparza, I think she returns to form. Marina's good. Just I think the wrestling deficiency she has will be a big, big plus for Esparza. Vitor Miranda, Eric Koch, Dennis Seaver, Tim Means, Dominic Reyes, Felice Herrick, Johnny Hendricks, and Michael Chiesa. If you could will one thing to happen, Jason, BJ Penn victory or Fedor Emelianenko win, which one do you want to see more?
Probably BJ Penn, because I've been so adamant that Matt Mitrione's going to win.
Yeah, that's a good one. You selfish man. Look, man, I'm going with the OG. This is a throwback Thursday weekend of fights, man. You got BJ, you got Fedor, you got Vanderlei, you got Chael. At the end of the day, we're going to feel really bad because, like, one of us is going to be on outside the lines in 15 years talking about how bad of an idea it was to have fighters fighting, like, in their 40s. But we're doing it this weekend. It's happening. And at the end of the day, I'm sure a fight that we haven't hyped too much will steal the show. But I'm really looking forward to it, man. I hope to God that they're showing the Bellator pay-per-view at the local Buffalo Wild Wings, because you know me, I love some wings. I don't love spending $60 for fight cards, and hopefully that's the deal for me. Where are you going to watch these fights, Jason?
I will be watching them at home because I have there's a thing I do with my friends every year, and this just happens to be the date that we're doing it. And by the time I get home will be when this fight card will be taking place. And looking forward to it. But I actually did look online this week to see, where this fight card was being shown. And when I searched earlier this week for my zip code, it ended up coming up with nothing within 25 miles of my zip code. I'm literally pulling up the website as I
where can I pull up? What's this website called?
It is GGCCEvents.com. There is only one place within 25 miles of my house that's showing it.
Okay. By the way, I'm interested.
And I've never heard of this bar before.
sounds like a great time. What do you and your friends do once a year? Is it just like kill a person? Is that what you guys do? Y'all get together and murder somebody?
No, we get a luxury suite at a minor league baseball team here locally. And, you know, we have a good old time. We do it once a year and, you know, we're all, I mean, look, we're all married and it's pretty much the one time here we all kind of get together. So, it just happens to be that this is the date it falls on. I mean, the game starts at like 6:15. So, you know, the game will be over at 9 o'clock. I'll be home by probably about 10 o'clock. So I'll be able to catch the pay-per-view.
It's not bad. There's no events within my 25-mile radius. So.
And that's not a good sign. That's, you know, but I think also it says a lot about the Bellator brand at this point. And, you know, we'll see. You know, my prediction on the pay-per-view buy rates is 120 to 150K. I heard Scott Coker mention 250K. I hope Scott Coker's right. I hope he's right. But, man, I can't see it.
Yeah, dude. I feel like again, I think it's going to be under 100,000. And they probably won't tell us that if it is, right? Like, if this does.
No, 80, of course not.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not like anyone's going to tell us anyway. But I think this is going to be a bad one, man. It just feels like no buzz. But for the love of God, I hope it works. Because, again, like, I love mixed martial arts so much. And I wish it success. And I wish every fighter would have a damn good living. And it's just, you know, we are certainly in a bit of a summer slump. It's been a while.
The way I describe this is it would be great for the MMA industry if this is a hit on pay-per-view. But if it's under 100,000, oh, man. I think if you're Bellator, if you're going to do these pay-per-views, you got to do them a couple times a year. But if you can't sell 100,000 buys, do you continue to kind of throw all that money into it? Ugh.
Yeah, I mean, I think the general consensus has to be 120, right? That's what people are saying is expected. Or
I think a lot of people are between 100 and 125,000. I think that seems to be the go-to out there. But you know, you just hope. I mean, look, Bellator, they've put together, and I think Scott Coker is right where he says they've put together a fight card for every kind of MMA fan. But at the end of the day, is Bellator a product that people are willing to pay additional money to see? I mean, obviously you have to pay for your cable to watch Bellator, but are you willing to take that extra step? And, you know, and I think the other part of this is, you know, if that fan is kind of on a budget of how much money, maybe they of entertainment money they have in a month, did they buy the Andre Ward pay-per-view? You know, are they already looking at whether they're maybe going to buy UFC 213 or UFC 214? I mean, that's got to go into it as well. I mean, you know, I'm going to fork over that. I believe it's $50 in HD to watch this. I mean, I'm going to fork over that money. I'm going to watch it. But it was interesting to me to hear people on social media that I would describe as hardcore fight fans say that they're not buying it.
Yeah, there's so many events every single week that it's easy to pass on things nowadays. And how much of this fight card will be readily available on social media within seconds of these finishes happening? If you're a hardcore fighter, I tell you, man,
I've seen so much stuff on Facebook Live, on Periscope. And the one I've heard about recently is Jailbroken Fire Sticks.
Jailbroken Fighter Sticks?
Amazon Fire Stick, right? That's what it's called, right?
Okay. You break it and you get it for free?
No, it's, you know, somebody, you know, I guess, you know, puts, you know, it's like, the, you know, when people would jailbreak their iPhone so they didn't have to pay for apps.
Yeah.
That's basically a thing, and it gets you all this pirated, you know, programming.
Yeah. I guess I'll have to get a fire stick. That's a joke. I'm kidding.
But that's unfortunately that's a mentality that all these, you know, sports programs have to deal with is people that are pirating their content. Well, but you know,
people, I mean, one last thing. How many people buy pay per views to watch other than like writers and hardcore fans? Who the hell is buying a mixed martial arts pay per view and then like just sitting by themselves and watching it? It's all about being an event with your friends, I think.
Yeah, I mean, because look, at the end of the day, and I for the most part, when it comes to UFC pay-per-views, I watch it with two buddies, so we split it three ways, $20 each. So it makes it easy, you know, but, you know, we order some food and whatnot. I mean, you still spend $30-$40 by the time you're done, but you know, not having it out at bars, that definitely does hurt Bellator a little bit, but we'll be back on Monday. We'll have the post-fight show. We'll recap Bellator, recap UFC. Be sure to give us a follow on Twitter at Jason_Floyd. Daniel is at Daniel Gavon, DDG. Of course, you can always listen to this podcast on RadioInfluence.com, also on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and Google Play.
This is a Sitting Ringside with David Penzer, Quick Fix, on Radio Influence.
Many of you know me, as I said, from WCW Monday Night Wars. Some of you know me from TNA and now Impact Wrestling. I hope there's people listening that just know the name. I want to get one thing straight. As I said earlier, I was lucky to live my dream. I don't consider myself a celebrity. I don't consider myself an A-lister, a B-lister, or a C-lister. I don't walk around signing autographs, taking pictures. I work hard for a living, doing other jobs that I love to do, and I'm honored anytime I could talk professional wrestling, because unlike so many people who love the business from the outside, I got to love it from the inside, sitting ringside every night. Some of the greatest matches, some of the worst matches, some of the funnest angles, some of the worst angles. And there's no egos here. It's just me talking, telling my stories, and talking to other talent, both talent that you'll know and those behind the scenes telling their stories. There's a lot of bigger names that have podcasts. There's a lot of richer guys that have podcasts. There's a lot of Hall of Famers that have podcasts. I'm coming from you for a different perspective. I'm a fan who got to be a part of it, still gets to be a part of it, knows the guys that I used to call my heroes, knows the guys that I used to want to meet and take pictures with and get autographs of. And I don't say that in a cocky way. I say that because I hope that you could feel like you're sitting with a down-to-earth wrestling fan who wants to talk wrestling. I'll be honest with you. I'm not getting a dime for doing this. If I ever am able to get sponsors, that would be a cool thing to have somebody care enough that I'm doing a decent job. But I'm not doing this for money, and I'm not doing this for fame. I'm doing this because I want to talk. I want to bring something, you know, maybe I guess I could summarize it as this, as a thank you. A thank you to the fans who gave me the opportunity to entertain them, even though I wasn't the people they were coming to see every night. Thank you to the people in the business who gave me an opportunity to do something that I had always wanted to do. And a thank you to the people in the business that continue to do so.
Sitting Ringside with David Penzer can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.